Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Will.
Did you know this podcast is sponsored by Shortboxed?
You mean the easiest and safest way to buy and sell graded comic books?
Yes, they are trusted by the most respected dealers and collectors in the industry.
Huh, never heard of them.
Wow, really sounded like you had.
No, I haven't, but I'll check them out, definitely.
Great. Screw it. We're just gonna talk about comics. Hello and welcome to Screw It. We're just going to talk about comics. That's comic books, everybody. The only podcast in human history where two brothers talk about something they like, and that thing is comic books. I'm one of the brothers slash comic book fans slash kind of comedians. My name's Will Hines.
And I'm the other one. I'm also a co-host. And my name is Kevin Hines.
And this is a Mutants and Mailbags episode.
Yeah,
where we spend half the episode going over some issues of Chris Claremont's run on the Uncanny X-Men, mm-hmm. and then the other half going over email.
Yeah, that's right.
And this episode, we're going to do issues 167 through 170 of the Uncanny X-Men. And
yeah, this is some prime Paul Smith era stuff. When I think of Paul Smith, I basically, the only issue I had in my mind was issue, I guess, what is 168? Professor Xavier is a jerk.
Yeah, that's a milestone, iconic moment in the X-Men.
Yeah. We're going to cover that today.
Yeah, and this basically is sort of the end of the Brood saga, Kevin's favorite story in the X-Men history. And then sort of the beginning of the New Mutants show up here.
Mm-hmm.
And some and Kitty Pryde versus Professor X a little bit too.
Yeah. And we start possibly setting the stage for what comes next. I don't know what comes next, so I don't know for sure. But like the Hellfire Club is doing some maneuvering in the background. And
yeah,
the Morlocks show up for the first time ever. They're pretty cool.
We get some cool Morlock stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin, what's your overall feeling about these issues?
These issues were really fun. This is, to me, a return to what I enjoy about this comic.
Yes, I really liked it too. Paul Smith seems to maybe go to work well with Claremont. His style goes well with the story. It's easier to follow. The emotional moments are sort of framed up nicely.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe Claremont was writing differently at this time, but the stories are more clear somehow.
It's hard to know whether or not Claremont was reacting to just a change of pace after the Brood saga anyway, if this would have happened anyway, or if he's reacting to Paul Smith's tendencies. There's no way to know for sure. Cockrum's great designs and epic spreads, but Paul Smith does really good character moments. And that's the stuff that speaks to me more and I think speaks to you more. Despite your Brood tattoo.
Yes, I didn't mind the Brood stuff so much, but this stuff's definitely just goes down easier. Maybe Paul Smith's just a better storyteller, just like this is happening in this panel, and now this is happening in this panel. Like, I'm not an illustrator, so it's hard for me to speak to that, but it might just be easier just to discern what's going on.
I also, maybe just Cockrum just can't do monthly. And he was rushing a little bit in those issues, especially with a double size. I guess Paul Smith did a double size finale, but you know, trying to keep up with all this, maybe Cockrum does better at like design work or a bi-monthly or sort of just like, I'll do a mini series that I can kind of all bang out ahead of time.
Yeah.
It's an interesting era of X-Men because this is like, I mean, X-Men is a hit now, and now they're spinning off new titles. New Mutants has begun recently.
Yeah.
And there's a Wolverine miniseries happening at this time.
Right. Is that written by Claremont and drawn by Frank Miller, I think?
I think so. I've never, I have not read it.
It is. So Frank Miller was one of the hottest artists of the time. Claremont would be one of the hottest writers. The Wolverine miniseries was a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, the most popular character from the X-Men, probably. Getting a spinoff with the most popular artist from the writer of the X-Men. It seems like a perfect pitch. Like it's the sort of thing that any editor is going to say, yes, whatever you want, make that happen.
So we're really into peak X-Men here.
Yeah.
One of the peaks.
I would say the beginning of the peak. And I don't think this peak ends Basically, probably until like the Iron Man movie comes out. I think like the X-Men rule Marvel from now until then. Like they are the heart and soul of what drives Marvel's finances and drives the universe. It's got its own big epic crossovers that eventually. I mean, there hasn't even been a Secret Wars crossover yet, but eventually X-Men has its own personal crossovers. It has more and more spin-offs. It becomes its own universe unto itself. I mean, the only thing even close to this is Spider-Man at this point. But Spider-Man, even though he's got multiple titles, it's smaller because it's just one dude.
Yeah.
And the X-Men is sprawling. It becomes sprawling, at least. Right now, it's not quite sprawling, I wouldn't say. But it is, you know, it's large enough that half the cast can be gone and this book can just truck along fine with still a pretty big cast.
And right. And the X-Men has such a variety of characters. You can focus on Kitty Pryde for a while. You can move over to Cyclops if you want. The New Mutants give you a whole new array of people. The New Mutants are just as international, perhaps more international than the X-Men. So like, it's really, you get a different flavor of experiences in the X-Men stories than you would in Spider-Man or the Avengers.
Yeah. And the Avengers obviously feels like it's not quite true. They've got a lot of their own like homegrown characters, but the Avengers always feels like here's an assortment of Marvel characters gathering. Right. The X-Men feel like here are the X-Men, and then the solo stories feel like, and here's an X-Men on a solo. Like you wouldn't look at a Captain America book and be like, an Avengers book with Captain America on his own.
Right, right. It starts with the solo books, and then the Avengers is almost bonus material in a way, but pre-MCU. Yeah. And then X-Men is the source. And then if they do something else, that's like supplemental.
Yeah, it's like Wolverine of the X-Men in his own book is what it feels like, even though now he is on every team.
There still is, in these issues, a healthy amount of what's happening and like, why does that work? I think that's just part of Claremont's storytelling. You know, or it's like, wait, that saved the day or that didn't save the day, blah, blah, blah. But it's still the stories are still really fun.
Well, the problems, I mean, this first issue maybe is an exception to that, but the problems that they have in these four issues aren't as epic as the Brood thing where it was just sort of like, well, there's no way to get out of this other than to commune with a whale spirit. how else would you get out of this problem? Where it's conceivable when you're fighting the Morlocks. It's like, okay, well, there's ways out of this. Though sometimes it just seems like Colossus can only break his ropes when it's convenient to the plot.
Yes.
It's tied up a lot and then breaks his ropes seemingly whenever he wants.
Right, right. What do you think? Why don't we talk about this first issue, Kev?
Yeah. I mean, I love the New Mutants. I think their powers are really fun for the most part. I'm a big Cannonball fan. Cannonball is the guy who can fly, and while he's flying, he's indestructible, but he can't really control how he's flying very well. So he's sort of a wild, he's at this stage, at least he's very wild. He sort of flies so fast and so out of control that he's not great at steering and stuff.
Yes, this issue, I'll say 167, just high level. The X-Men return from the Brood and they have to, this is one last Brood chapter basically. Mm-hmm. And the royal egg is implanted in Professor X and the X-Men have returned to see if Professor X has turned into a Brood or to get the egg out. And the New Mutants are living in the mansion now. And so we get to see the X-Men meet the New Mutants and deal with a Brood infested Professor X. That's the story.
And I think because the New Mutants are there, it feels like most of the issue is them dealing with the New Mutants, and the Brood stuff is almost plot B.
Okay, yeah, I can see that.
It's how it feels when I'm reading it.
The first half of the book is definitely New Mutants centered. We meet them. So we see Sam Guthrie, Rain Sinclair, Roberta DaCosta, Danielle Moonstar, Jian Khoi Man. And so that's Cannonball, Sunspot. What's the werewolf's name?
Wolfsbane.
Wolfsbane, yes. And then Karma and Danielle Moonstar. I forget.
It becomes Mirage. I think it might be something different at this point. think it's Psych or something like that.
Psych. That's right. It's Psych.
But it quickly becomes, they change it to Mirage.
Psyche.
Yeah. But they change it to Mirage because that's what I know her as.
Yeah.
Better. That's a better name.
And so the New Mutants are sort of like the junior league X-Men. They are students more than superheroes in Professor X's eyes. They're supposed to be just trained and kept out of danger, whereas the X-Men are the big league, major league superhero team.
Yeah.
Right.
It's very funny. It's very funny to have a comic book about these characters won't do any missions or have any adventures. It's sort of
strange.
If Professor X was pitching the comic, that's his pitch.
Yeah.
This is just school. they go on lots of adventures, so it does not work out like Professor X wants it to.
I mean, in this adventure, when the X-Men are battling the possessed Professor X, they immediately are like, these kids have superpowers. It would be really useful to involve them.
Yeah, yeah. They ask for one of them to come along immediately.
Yeah, but it makes sense. They're like super-powered, supernatural beings who seem relatively in control of their powers.
Yeah, they fought us very well.
Let's bring the werewolf for it to help us track.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it's great.
When we first see the New Mutants, they're watching, I think, Magnum P.I., and they are more interested in Magnum P.I. than I remember the youth of America being interested. They're watching it like it's Miami Vice or like the coolest show ever.
Like you up from Magnum to Miami Vice, which is, I mean, it is a step higher, but it isn't like
Magnum. At least Miami Vice was like a hit. Like Miami Vice was like a cool show and weird thing. This is just like, way to go, Magnum. Look at that man move. I don't remember Magnum's moving really fast. I don't think
their eyes are glued their eyes are glued to the set. Like they are watching the most astonishing movie like ever. They're watching it more like it's Alien or Terminator or something. Like, oh my goodness.
Yes, yes, yes.
They're not watching it like it is an episode of a TV show.
It's really funny.
It's more like Fall Guy, the way they're so wrapped with attention.
You're underselling Miami Vice. But
I don't think anyone watched Miami Vice the way their eyes are wide open in awe.
Well,
they're look at Don Johnson's sockless pants. Oh man, what
how many episodes
look.
Of Miami Vice have you seen?
I don't know. How many episodes of Magnum have you seen?
10.
All right. I've seen none of any of them. They all look the same to me.
You watch Miami Vice, you'll get sucked in. It's nothing like The Brood, but it's still pretty good. this reverie is interrupted by the X-Men who just come in inexplicably destroying the place. Right?
Inexplicably. This is what the X-Men do. They don't like doors. If a door is closed, the X-Men are going to break it down fast and as angrily as possible.
Cyclops blows one open with his beams. Nightcrawler teleports in, which makes sense, but Cyclops also bursts in through the window. But, you know, they're worried about Professor X.
Yeah, Colossus and Wolverine shatter through the window. It is Storm staying outside, I guess, for this moment. That's nice of her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what a terrifying thing to happen. They should be watching a horror movie. It looks like they're watching a horror movie, and I think Claremont changed it to be a hip popular reference.
Of Magnum P.I., yeah.
I think so, because it looks like they're watching a horror movie, and then this would be a very scary thing to happen and also have a monster in the house. It feels like we're watching something scary.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'm on edge. I'm nervous. And then, boom, Nightcrawler appears behind me.
So the X-Men invade. Somehow the New Mutants don't know what the X-Men look like, which I find crazy. Like if you were on the minor league baseball team of the Boston Red Sox, the Boston Red Sox walked into your practice room, you would be like, who are these guys? You would know who the Boston Red Sox are, right?
That's fair.
You're trying to be on that team.
But they also thought the X-Men were dead, right? Everyone thinks the X-Men are dead. That often happens. The X-Men
leave town for...
Yeah. Whenever the X-Men leave town, everyone just sort of puts up gravestones and moves on with their lives. So they might think these are like clones or something like that.
Cannonball immediately takes out Colossus, which is pretty impressive. He blasts into invulnerable form and just knocks the big guy out of the house.
Yeah. I'm pretty much invulnerable as Cannonball. Love it.
Why do you love it so much? What about Cannonball?
I like simple powers. I like one note powers that do one thing. I also like powers that don't work well. It's more interesting. There's more to do with it than someone who's like, I don't know, someone who has like 10 powers. I don't like powers that are ill-defined, right? Like, it's like, oh, I absorb kinetic energy and I can blast it back. Do I feel pain? Sort of. I don't know. Can I blast as lasers, or do I get stronger? A little bit of both. And it's like, oh, okay, maybe I can manipulate this kinetic energy into powering this battery.
Yeah,
I guess I don't understand your powers. Cannonball's like, I'm fast, and you can't hurt me when I'm flying. there's no confusion over what he can or can't do. Like, if he's sort of absorbing energy, you'd be like, well, that's not a thing he can do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I love.
Hey, I like Cannonball fine, but your whole life you've loved him, and it strikes me as funny. Does Cannonball ever get his powers under control, or is his whole life he just like?
No, I think he is careening. He's less interesting now. He's just a guy who can fly and is really strong. Like, he's now what he's interesting for is like, he's been a mutant for so long that he's sort of grown into his own. But it's like, all right. So his story ended basically in my eyes.
Okay. Meanwhile, Kitty Pryde is sneaking upstairs. The X-Men are breaking in here because they want to take out Professor X before he turns into a monster.
Smart move.
And so while Cyclops and Colossus get into a fight with the new mutants, Kitty Pryde is phasing in upstairs to sort of sneak into Professor X's room. But meanwhile, we see the new mutants on display fighting Cyclops and Nightcrawler. Psyche summons a nightmare vision to scare Colossus. Rain werewolf
scare Cyclops.
Cyclops, sorry. Rain turns into a werewolf and like temporarily knocks Nightcrawler down. Sunspot attacks Wolverine. That is to no avail. He's not strong enough to stop Wolverine.
I think he's strong enough. He's not good enough fighter. He's probably stronger than Wolverine. I mean, his power is strength, but
okay.
But Wolverine.
This interaction doesn't do much.
No, Wolverine is a great fighter.
Wolverine thinks if these kids had the skill to match their spunk, they'd be dangerous. There's a lot of like the X-Men respecting the new mutants, but saying that they're amateur.
Yeah, Karma tries to take over Wolverine's brain, but can't because Wolverine's brain is too untakeable.
C'est impossible. She's French, I guess. Or she speaks French.
Kitty Pryde has one of these Starjammer guns that looks like a bong.
It looks like a bong. She points the bong at Professor X, but doesn't want to use it because she wants to verify if he's been taken over by the Brood. So she hesitates, and that's a mistake because Professor X has been taken over by the Brood, and he immediately aggressively mentally attacks Kitty Pryde and I guess makes her drop the gun or something.
I mean, he's got mental powers of sorts. Yeah. Then we cut back to some more fighting. Sunspot versus Wolverine. Nightcrawler takes out Psyche and Karma by bonking their heads together. So they both have concussions. Great job, Nightcrawler. Give some children some concussions.
Thought you were a man of faith.
Kitty Pryde gets thrown through another door. X-Men are happy because it's another door destroyed.
They hate doors. Then evil Professor X comes out and fully transforms into a brood monster. Looks like bad news to me.
Yeah.
Which also means he's a brood monster with Professor X's insane mental powers.
Yeah. You know what I say when I see something like that?
What?
Lenin's ghost. Which is what Colossus says when he sees almost anything.
Yeah. Or by the White Wolf.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's the brood. So now they have to fight Xavier Brood.
Yeah.
And he has telepathy. He can read all their thoughts. He can try to control their minds. He plus has like just the brood power of being a crazy, scaly, strong alien. I think this is also the queen, right? This is a queen who's.
I guess. I mean, they were all the eggs were referred to as queens. I don't understand any of that. That's brood confusion.
Karma tries to possess, the queen, but is unable to because of the alien thoughts. And then the alien uses Xavier's mental abilities that it's acquired to zap Karma back. So Karma is hurt.
There's a cool moment where the alien, the brood, throws Colossus and Wolverine jumps on the flying Colossus to use him as like a launching pad.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. And the Paul Smith art is looking pretty here. And it is just like, it's much simpler to see what's happening than I felt in previous issues. Just, yeah. I'm actually never so into like fights, but I can, the fight I'm oriented pretty well here.
It's also one brood instead of like legions of them in alien landscapes. It's one brood in Westchester County. It's a simpler setup for sure. Then Binary shows up in like
Wolverine cuts off the stinger first, and then the Brood flies into the air to sort of get a better fighting position. And then Binary shows up, who's like insanely powerful. Mm-hmm. Not Phoenix level, but like, you know, big tier one superhero level.
Yeah. And then Storm also helps out.
Yeah. So Storm is a big blizzard, and they subdue the creature, and then the creature speaks, and Professor X now speaks, and there's still a vestige of Professor X's personality. And it's a little interesting exchange where Xavier in the Brood says, "Kill me, Scott, I beg you," so that the monster doesn't claim his powers. And Wolverine's all on board with that. You heard the man, and is like, yeah, Wolverine, let's kill it.
Just waiting to be asked to kill somebody.
I do like Wolverine in this phase of comics, because it's not arbitrary. It does make sense. Like, if this creature is going to acquire the power of the world's greatest telepath and you can kill it right now.
Yeah. And he also knows he's the only one who's going to do it.
Yep.
So he's got to step up. He can't hesitate, because if he hesitates, it's not happening, because Storm is not going to do it. Cyclops is not going to do it. Nightcrawler is not going to do it. Colossus is not going to do it.
But Cyclops overrules Wolverine and says, no, if there's a chance to save Professor X, we have to try. And they bring him to the Starjammers. And the
Cyclops asks, any objections? Wolverine goes, lots. And everyone else says, no.
He says lots. Storm says none, which is kind of like, that's their philosophical debate they've been having. Storm won't kill and Wolverine doesn't mind.
It's just very funny. Any objections? Lots is a very funny response to that.
So we go to the Starjammers medical bay. We get the little mosquito doctor, Sikorsky. And it's basically like they're going to clone a new body for Xavier.
Yeah, they let the Brood die and they just make him a new body and move his brain into the cloned body, I guess.
And it's one of those things where it's like, if this option is available to you, I can think of a lot of comic book storylines that can be affected by this.
Well, it is 100% the concept behind the new X-Men status quo, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I haven't gotten that far.
How far have you gotten? I thought I got Power of X.
I read like 75% of Power of X, House of X, and I got bored. I got like, I can't keep track of what's going on.
Oh, wow. That was way more fun to me than the last 12 issues of Brood comics.
I really, really, really loved the beginning of House of X and Power of X, and just it was compelling and mysterious. But after a while, I was like, okay, wait, so Moira McTaggart's got this many lives and this is happening and this timeline. Yeah. And I didn't really know a lot of the story that they're retelling.
Either did I, but I followed it just fine. I'm smarter than you.
You're smarter than me. Dummies like me can't follow it.
The current status quo in the X-Men is that any X-Men who dies can be immediately resurrected. They can create a new body and just transfer the brain back into that new body.
I am for this like new X-Men reboot, because it just seems to revitalize it and make it exciting and new again. And I'm down for that. I don't like clinging to old tropes. Nonetheless, I did get bored. So I don't know. It might not be for me.
I think it's really fun. Our previous guest, Brett White, dislikes it a lot. Yes. Chris Claremont seems to dislike it without having read it.
Although Claremont dislikes anything he didn't write, I think.
And I get all those complaints too, because it is nothing like what the X-Men has been ever before, right? It is not like just saying like...
It's not honoring the history. It's like wiping the slate clean.
Here's three new members. It's not that. It is, okay, now the X-Men are immortal. They live forever. They all live in an island together. Even the bad guys are good guys. They live on Mars. They can do anything anywhere they want. And it's like, what is this comic? This exists now in the Marvel Universe.
I guess
it is an insane, huge science fiction status quo
shift, yeah.
And if you really love the X-Men... like the core of the X-Men, a team of mutants going off and fighting bad guys. That's gone.
Yeah. At least for now.
It'd be like, oh, now Spider-Man is a comic about giant robot warriors.
Yeah.
Fighting an alien race of other robots. It's basically Transformers. It'd be like, well, okay, it might still be a good comic, but it's not Spider-Man. And I get that complaint a lot.
I get that complaint too. But
because I don't have like the invested history in the X-Men, I think I'm just like, oh, it's a fun story.
Also, since Marvel doesn't own the movie rights to X-Men in the MCU.
They do now, but yes, go on.
Permanently?
Disney bought Fox. So, yeah.
Okay, so, but while that was sort for a long time, for the last like 15 years, that has not been true. So the comic books were sort of like neglecting the X-Men in favor of the Avengers. It's despite their long success.
Yes.
So this is kind of a funny, in a weird meta way, a comeuppance. The X-Men's like, oh, you're not going to let us have our rightful place at the center of the Marvel universe? Then we will become the craziest part.
Yeah.
And we will once again grab the attention of everybody.
Yeah, the X-Men now are owned by Disney, and so are the Fantastic Four. For a while, there was no Fantastic Four comic, and people think it was because Disney higher-ups were like, don't make a Fantastic Four comic. It's advertising for Fox movies. But they're like, oh, should we not make X-Men comics? They're like, well, those make too much money. We have to keep doing those. Uh-huh, but like, right, let's just not make them important. And so that's why they tried to make the Inhumans important, to sort of take the X-Men place. And that did not land.
Okay, so back to our X-Men.
Yes, yes, yes.
They're on the Starjammer ship. Xavier's going to be cloned.
Yes.
And there is a nice, so for example, while that's happening, we get like little character moments. We see Colossus and Kitty get reunited. She did not reunited, but she was knocked out in the battle and he's comforting her. Storm is talking about how lonely she feels. She and Nightcrawler have a little convo. These issues have this nice like pace of like battle and then quiet conversation and then battle. And I think this is coming up on when I started buying X-Men comics more often than not. So these are feeling familiar to me. This is the X-Men that I remember, I guess. This Paul Smith era.
Yeah, I certainly haven't read these issues that we've read today before.
Cyclops has a moment with his dad, you know, fully forgiving him for all the anger we have. There's some more Queen Lalandra Shi'ar stuff when the Gladiator shows up and he wants to see Lalandra. And there's some drama there that I forget what happens. Oh, they're mad at Reed Richards about the Trial of Galactus.
Yeah. There's a little crossover with Fantastic Four, sort of plugging a John Byrne story. It seems nice for these two guys that don't get along. Maybe it was forced on Claremont. I don't know.
Yes. That's interesting. Yeah. So, yeah, the X-Men here is plugging a big Fantastic Four story, which, of course, is the realm of John Byrne now. Yeah. Claremont, we interviewed Claremont. He didn't say anything bad about Byrne. He didn't have a bad, you know, he had lots of negative things to say about stories that were done without him.
Yeah.
And he really, you know, he really dismissed X-Men decisions made without him. And he didn't like how he's not given enough work or enough authority as he would like. He said that in a polite way, but that certainly was his complaint. But never did he besmirch John Byrne. And that's interesting to me because we've seen in interviews with John Byrne that John Byrne besmirches not Claremont personally, but like the stories that Claremont did without Byrne. Byrne's like, I didn't like him, basically.
Yeah.
I would have done it differently. That's not how I would do it.
Yeah. And talked about how he had to like fight tooth and nail to make the X-Men good when he was drawing it.
He comes pretty close to saying, I didn't like Claremont or the way he did things. He doesn't quite go there.
Yeah.
But he's way more aggressive about criticizing Claremont's work. Claremont doesn't do that to Byrne. And I wonder if that says something about what their dynamic was behind the scenes, that Claremont's, hey, I liked what you did. I was in favor of it.
Well, especially when you think about the fact that like Byrne felt the need to kind of make fun of the Dr. Doom moment that Claremont writes. But here, Claremont is just sort of setting up a nice little acknowledgement the Fantastic Four storyline, a great Fantastic Four storyline that John Byrne is doing.
Yeah, the Trial of Galactus, one of the high points of John Byrne's Fantastic Four run, I would say. Anyway, it is as fans, it's fun to see these former partners have at least some version of a shout out to each other, or at least Claremont shouting out Byrne.
Yeah, Professor X can walk again, or he has the ability to walk again, but he's got psychosomatic. It's funny that this mental juggernaut can't overcome his psychosomatic, the fact that he feels like he should be in pain when he walks.
Yeah. At first I was like, that seems kind of unnecessarily complicated. If you clone him in a body, he should be able to walk. But I like Professor X being in a wheelchair. For some reason, that's part of his identity. And so I was glad that they constructed this way. I guess I like this story decision is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I like it too. I like that if he's going to be able to walk, they're not making it snap of a finger. He can just walk now.
Yeah.
It's still going to be a hard one thing. And he also decides that Kitty Pryde should be in the New Mutants, which I'll say makes a lot of sense.
If you're going to have New Mutants and you have this 14-year-old on the X-Men and there's these other 14-year-olds who are in the house, on a separate team. I don't know if it makes sense to have the New Mutants not be fighting battles, but if you're doing that,
yeah,
it does make sense. But this next issue is fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's basically Kitty Pryde does not like being demoted to the New Mutants. And the next issue is going to be her fighting that.
And I mean, I agree with Kitty when it comes down to it. I think X's decision makes sense, but Kitty is right in the sense, like, if you change the rules, that's fine. Kitty's grandfathered in as an X-Men.
That's right.
She went to outer space for a year's worth of stories.
But she makes all the arguments. She's saved their lives multiple times. She's carried her weight and then some.
Yeah.
She's got the experience. She's earned her stripes.
Yeah. I always hate when like rules change and then they're like, so now, you know, you can't do this anymore. And it's like, well, that's what I've been doing all along. You can't change it out from under me. When I was in high school, they changed our school. Well, when I was a senior, we were a 3-year high school when you went.
Yes.
10th, 11th, 12th. And when I was in 12th grade, they brought in the ninth graders. So it was a bigger high school. They expanded it. They made it a lot bigger. They took, and when we were in 10th and 11th grade, when you had a free period, your time was your own. You could leave the school grounds. You could go wherever you wanted. There was no set lunch periods. You could just get lunch if you had free periods. There's a lot of freedom to it. It was like an open campusy feel to our high school. But in 12th grade, they changed all that. There was a set lunch period. Everyone had to have that lunch period. You could not leave. There were set study halls. You could never leave the place. You were supposed to be there from first period to whatever, eighth period or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And they changed those rules for the seniors too. And it was really hard for us because we were like, for the last 2 years, we didn't have these rules.
Yeah.
And most of the senior teachers sort of didn't care if you broke the rules as seniors. They're just all like, yeah, we understand that, like, you guys don't want to follow these new rules. But everyone else has to. So they kind of did give us some allowances there to be more flexible in it. But it was like, that was the sort of thing that happened. It was like, oh, these are new rules. And it's like, oh, you can't do that after 3 years or 2 years of us not having these rules.
Yeah. I can see why that was frustrating. Did you throw down? Did you lead a student revolution?
No, but I did come in late. I didn't have first period a lot of days. So I didn't come in for homeroom. I just skipped it and came to second period and just did what I would have done if the rules had not changed. And
I love that. Care. That Kevin mm-hmm. Rebel phase. But we should move a little faster.
Sure.
But this next issue, actually, I say that now, this next issue is incredible. Yeah. This is the Professor Xavier is a jerk.
So this is the one who described every action sequence in the last issue.
Yeah. So I'm talking to myself more than you. Will, you should go faster. We have this issue 168 is Professor Xavier is a jerk. This is an iconic, famous panel. Mm-hmm. And Kitty is right. Xavier has been dismissive kind of her the whole time. And without merit, she has
for somebody who recruited her. I mean, it's not like she was added to the team when he was gone. He added her to this team.
And she's been on a number of it right away. She saved the X-Men on her like day one on the team. Mm-hmm. Like when Storm is talking to her in the diner, when she first joins, they're attacked by the Hellfire Club Sentinels. And then the Hellfire Club, and Kitty steps up and saves them. Or is part of what saves them.
Yeah.
And she's done that many times. And so now she's on the New Mutants. She hates it. And this whole issue is her like consulting with friends and what should I do? And the other X-Men are talking about it. Professor X is trying to learn how to walk with his new body. And she eventually gets advice from Stevie Hunter, the dance teacher, that she should fight. And so she does. And she aggressively starts trying to persuade Professor X to change his mind.
We also get another instant friendship. Now Kitty is best friends with Ilyana, who was like 7
a couple recently. Weeks ago. Yeah.
Yeah. So I get that Ilyana might really like Kitty, though Ilyana also spent, it's not like Ilyana just turned 13. She spent 7 years in a limbo demon realm.
Right.
But somehow they're just like best friends as if they've been lifelong buds.
That's the way it is in the X-Men. Emotions go forever.
And we also have somebody watching Kitty all this time, and it's Lockheed the Dragon, who followed her home from the Brood planet.
Right. So we're going to have a little mini dragon in the mix pretty soon.
Yeah.
We also, Scott Summers is on vacation or something and reunites with his boat captain girlfriend.
Yeah, he goes to see her for a brief tryst before he falls in love with somebody else.
Right, he falls in love next issue with somebody else. But right here, she immediately goes to half shirt uniform. They're always walking on beaches, these two.
You think they'd be scared to do that? Last time they were on a beach, they were stranded in a Cthulhu temple.
We also see Nightcrawler reuniting with his flight attendant / magician girlfriend.
Yeah, and it's sort of with a Nightcrawler doll covering up where his penis would be, seemingly as if he's naked, but he's not. He's fully clothed.
It looks sort of like the Burt Reynolds Playgirl pose, though. This does look kind of like a funnily sexy Nightcrawler pose. Kitty, in the midst of her trying to get out of the New Mutants, discovers in the basement some vestigial members of that alien race that attacked the X-Men pre-Brood.
Right, the ones that destroyed the X-Mansion that were chasing Corsair.
There's a nest of them. She discovers it with her computer prowess. She notices something on the scanners, and then she goes down and she and Lockheed defeat them, and she does it without her phase powers.
Yeah, her phase powers get deactivated, but Wolverine has trained her in fighting. And in superhero comics, if you've done a few training room sessions with somebody, you are an excellent fighter. Captain America can show you like a couple moves, and Rick Jones can hold his own.
When you're a superhero, you learn fast. So she holds off these aliens on her own. She knocks out a couple. Then Colossus gets in the mix and helps finish it up. And Lockheed eats all the eggs.
Yeah. Gives a little cute burp.
And this convinces Professor X. He's like, yep, you're right. I was hasty. You're an X-Men. So we'll just have a thing where you're on the X-Men. But if you fall behind in your studies, you get demoted to the New Mutants. And Kitty's fine with that.
Yeah. And then Lockheed's allowed to stay because otherwise Lockheed might eat Professor X, is the joke they make.
So now there's just a dragon. And then we cut to...
It is weird because when I was reading X comics, the dragon was just part of it. And it just felt like, oh, this is always part of Kitty Pryde's thing. And I never thought about, where did this dragon come from? Why is it here? It just felt right.
Yeah.
And now that I've seen it introduced, I'm like, this is a very weird addition to the book.
Yeah, it's like a fantastical sort of fairy tale sort of addition.
Yeah.
Scott Summers is going to meet his grandparents. He and Havoc are with Starjammer Dad going to Alaska to meet his parents.
I'll give Corsair some credit. For once in his life, he's not walking around in his space pirate outfit. He generally strolls down New York in that thing. Here he's wearing like a winter coat and he's looking like a human being for once.
And then Scott Summers meets Madeline Pryor, who is a genetic duplicate of Jean Grey.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know that now, right? She's just someone who looks just like her.
Right. We don't know that this is actually a genetic duplicate, but it's somebody who looks exactly like her. Yeah. Pretty crazy.
I never fully understood the Madeline Pryor thing at all.
Like the justification of it or just why it exists?
I don't know her whole story. I know she was around and he was married to her, and then he leaves her when Jean Grey comes back to life, and she's still around. Like, she becomes a goblin queen. I'm like, okay, I don't get that character at all.
The whole death of Jean Grey, like, they just never were totally comfortable with. They kept trying to bring her back in different ways. Like, Madeline Pryor is a way to bring a Jean Grey-ish person back.
It is insane. It's maybe one of the most insane things that ever happened to Cyclops, to be like, I'm going to go on vacation, meet my grandparents, and then he meets a Jean Grey clone.
Yeah.
It's not what he's expecting.
The next two issues, 169 and 170, are the Morlocks.
Yeah, I think these are really fun too.
And the basic overall story is that Callisto, the head of the Morlocks, kidnaps Angel to be her husband because she thinks he's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then in the midst of the battle, Kitty Pryde gets wounded and Caliban rescues her on condition that she marry him.
Yeah, and Storm then fights Callisto for leadership of the Morlocks so that she can save the X-Men, and she wins.
And you get to meet a lot of the Morlocks, and they're basically mutants who are just kind of live in the sewers. So they have like a lot of superpowers, and there's fun powers in there. And this just becomes a little society that we're going to visit now and then, right?
Yeah. And this is happening while Cyclops is with Madeline Pryor and while Wolverine is off in his mini series. So it's a depleted team.
Yeah.
There's a fun bit here where Angel's gone missing and Professor X asks Nightcrawler to look into it because Nightcrawler's so close. Nightcrawler is like in the middle of a nude bath with his girlfriend, but instantly teleports outside to go check on his friend, which is really cool. But he's also like naked teleporting around the city.
Yeah.
And then he wasted their time. I loved it.
And he brings Angel's girlfriend, who's been incapacitated by the Morlocks, back to his hot tub and deposits her in the hot tub while he goes and tends to whatever happened to Angel.
Yeah, it's sort of a very funny, but also sort of smart move. We see that the Hellfire Club is beginning to do stuff, like Emma Frost is like in a coma or something for some reason. We don't quite know what's going on there, though.
Yeah, but they're planning something.
Mm-hmm.
Kitty Pryde has a new uniform.
Yeah. And she's pushing against, she doesn't like the name Sprite anymore. Does that happen in this issue or the previous issue?
That happens in this issue. That happens in this issue. I don't like it either. I think she's right.
It's not a good name.
I just think of her as Kitty Pryde. I've never thought of her as anything else. Maybe Shadow Cat?
I think of her as Shadow Cat, but I guess nobody else likes that name. I'm not sure why. That name works for me. They go into the sewer tunnels to look for Angel. They have a Cerebro unit to help detect Angel because they don't have any other way to track him because they don't have Wolverine with them. And this is where, as well alluded to earlier, Storm's like, hey, can we bring Wolvesbane with us? She could track. Professor X said, no way.
Right. That'll be an ongoing thing. The New Mutants wanting to go on adventures and Professor X being kind of a strict dad. I'm going by it quickly, but these issues are really fun. The adventures are really fun. The fighting is fun. The powers of the Morlocks is fun. Again, Paul Smith's art is just great and clear, and it alternates between action and conversation moments well. There's a little Rogue. Rogue is introduced. We're back to Rogue a little bit here.
Oh, yeah. We see Rogue near the end of the second issue?
Near 170. We see her escaping from the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants who kind of raised her.
Yeah, and I guess there's been some Brotherhood of Evil Mutants stories that we have not read in, like, Avengers annuals and things like that, because we haven't seen much of Rogue in X-Men comics at all. We saw her once.
Right.
And we have not seen her as part of the Brotherhood at all.
That's right. Not in the X-Men comics.
Yeah, I have not read those. I think these comics are great. These are the sort of comics. These are really fun and a lot more. They're just paced great. They're simpler stories. I find the escapes make sense. Everything is clearly well established, you know, like Kitty Pryde is diseased, so they need to get her to a hospital so that they can help save her, use like the high-tech X-Men medical bay to save her. Yeah. All they need to do is get away from the Morlocks to pull that off. And like, that all makes sense. And the Morlocks outnumber them. And most of their powers don't seem that powerful, but the one who gives you disease at a touch is pretty powerful.
Yes.
That the only way to get out of there is to fight the leader is sort of the rule is defined. The X-Men play by that rule and win by that rule. It's very cool.
The visual look of these characters is cool. Like the character who can give you a plague named Plague is kind of this like, you know, gleefully grotesque sort of creature, woman of the sewers. And then Mask, who is ugly but can make other people beautiful, prefers to make other people ugly like him.
Yeah, Mask can change what anyone looks like.
Except himself.
Except for himself. And he is like a Quasimodo-ish looking dude.
Callisto looks like the lead singer of the Pretenders, Chrissy Hynde. She's kind of got a cool, you know, pirate king of the sewers look
Does
going.
Does Callisto have powers?
I don't know.
I'm not sure what Callisto's powers are.
Just being badass, just confidence, just leadership.
There's a great moment when Storm accepts this battle. And Storm is like a little bit diseased at this moment, but is going to do this fight. And Callisto like tosses a knife at Storm and Storm catches it in a really badass way. And Callisto's like, uh-oh. It's a really fun, slow moment that it's given the real estate to really hit.
Yes. And the emotional battle here is it's a fight to the death, but Storm has vowed to never kill anybody, but she's got to save Kitty. So what she does is stab Callisto in the heart, but betting that she will still be saved. So that she does the act of killing somebody without actually resulting in somebody's death is what Storm was gambling on.
Yeah. It's also really cool that Nightcrawler and Colossus are sort of let you know that, because while that is clear, I do think it needs to be hit in this issue. You can't just assume everyone knows this and just,
that's one thing that
Colossus sees Storm catch the knife and he's impressed And Nightcrawler says, "It's a bluff, mein Freund. Aurora has sworn never to take a human life, remember? Once Callista realizes that, Storm is finished." And it gives the necessary stakes to this.
Yeah, and I think like one thing that might be better in these issues is it's done there in a nice, clean little speech balloon before it goes down. And I feel like there's been other X-Men issues where the battle would finish and then there'd be some long caption box explaining this.
Yeah, or a bunch of caption boxes during, where like the next page is a couple of caption boxes up top, but then it's like
just action. Ooh,
1, 2, 3, 4, and the 6 on the next page, so almost 10, 12 panels with like only a couple captions total the entire time and not even much dialogue.
Yeah.
It is like a Stan Lee would apologize for this type of page coming up, but you love to see it. You love to see sort of pages where like the art is communicating it. You don't need any captions. So yeah. Calm down, Chris. And Chris did. Good for him.
So I think we're into a good phase of X-Men here.
Yeah, I mean, Paul Smith doesn't stick around long. I think we're already halfway through Paul Smith's era.
Crazy.
Because by the time we get to issue 180, I know John Romita Jr. is on board. I don't know when he takes over, but so.
Wow.
I think Paul Smith is here for like a year maybe at most.
Well, what a year. That's what I say.
Yeah, I mean, he's good.
All right, let's take a long overdue break. Will Willie Hines talk too much about the first issue? So let's take a break.
Okay.
So Kevin, Screw It Comics is sponsored by Shortboxed. Why don't you tell the people what that is?
Shortboxed is an app and a website where people buy and sell graded comic books that they've uploaded photos of and then, you know, ship them to each other. Sort of like a very specialized shopping network. I've already talked too much.
No, you're doing great. And what is graded comic books?
Graded comic books are when people send their comics to a third party. Mm-hmm. Who take these comics and kind of judge the condition of the comic book. Is it folded? Is it ripped a little bit? Is it how faded are the colors? And then they kind of seal it in like sort of this hard plastic and send it back with a grade on it between like 0 and 10. So 10 being like, oh, this comic is in perfect condition. It could not possibly be better. And 1 is, what did you do to this comic book?
What happened?
You're
here?
A monster. Yeah.
And Shortbox, their app has just been redesigned recently. So it's more intuitive and prettier.
And they have giveaways where you can like enter contests to win graded comic books, sometimes signed, sometimes pretty old. I've entered a few and I've won 0.
Hint, Shortboxed. Let's rig it for your sponsees.
Yeah, there's no controversy there.
Yeah, so Shortboxed is great. We think you should download the Shortboxed app and check it out today.
Or tomorrow, one of the two.
All right, and we are back. We're getting into the mailbags portion of our episode. We got a couple of emails we're gonna go over. Kevin and I are recording these episodes a little bit ahead of time in February because I'm going on some improv travels, and things are getting busy. So we're a little bit ahead of time here.
I've got some work coming up that'll make recording just difficult to schedule. So
we're about to fall a little bit behind on mail, but we'll catch up for right now, Kevin. So if you want to email us, send us an email at screwitcomics@gmail.com. Because when we catch up, we'll probably do a bunch of mail when we catch up. So please send us some stuff. You can also contact us on Twitter or Instagram at screwitcomics. If you're an Instagram person, please follow us. It's a great account. You get great screenshots of the comics we're talking about. Kevin, do we got an email?
Yeah. First, I'm going to read one from a friend of yours from high school, friend of the podcast, Dan Gelati.
Nice.
Hello, Sops of Batman, he starts. I'm very much enjoying revisiting The Dark Knight Returns. I've read it several times since getting the first collected edition for Christmas, 1986 or 1987. It's fun to go back and look at it issue by issue. It allows some more absorption than just powering through the whole book. This time around, the aging Batman thing is hitting me different, which happens with art, but I'm struck by the feeling of being past your prime and still needing to get shit done. His fight with the mutant leader is amazing because he adapts using wisdom and experience. He can't go toe-to-toe with the younger beast, though he tries the first time. Maybe he remembers the Mammoth quote, "Old age and treachery will always beat youth and exuberance." Or in this case, youthful psychotic rage. Dark Knight gets blamed for ushering in grim and gritty, but the thing I'm especially noticing now is that it's at its heart, it's hopeful. We can rise up against villains and we can stand against darkness and we can beat overwhelming odds, even super aliens. I think other grim and gritty that came after this, and even sister work Watchmen, neglect that aspect and instead revel in the cynicism and squalor. Batman does what he has to do because regular people deserve to live in safety, free from fear. As he beats the tar out of the mutant master, I found myself getting excited for this triumphant Dark Knight. It truly was rousing. I also appreciate how quickly he sees in Carrie that she is awesome, brave, and capable, and that he needs Robin. In other hands, that would have been they would have drawn this out, but Miller's certainty shows here he knows that Batman needs Robin too. So why a dick about wasting pages? Alfred is at his most hilarious. Gordon heading regretfully into retirement as a bookend to Batman coming out of it is well done. And Gordon and Mindell's respect and admiration for each other, despite this difficult situation they are thrust in, further shows that this is a work of an artist at the top of his game. And I agree with all that stuff. I think it's...
Yeah, well said, Dan.
Yeah. He goes on to talk a little bit about the X-Men. I loved the Cockrum Arum as a kid, but it really doesn't hold up. Byrne often says he worked against Claremont's worst storytelling instincts. And I got to say, in rereading these, I totally see it. There are still some gems. Kitty has some great, awesome moments. Her costume changes are hilarious. And very teenager, her friendship with Kurt and the way that she's the little sister of the whole team really is great. The Brood are a pretty awesome, if not derivative, villain. And Wolverine's healing factor expelling it, but not without some grotesque effects, is cool as hell. And yet it's slipshod and silly and unengaging in equal measure. Reading ahead, I think Paul Smith elevates the book again for a while, but I was surprised by how strong the Byrne Claremont issues are compared to the Cockrum Claremont stuff, to an issue, I'd even say. And I agree with that a lot.
We agree with Dan Gelati.
Yeah.
Spoken, I guess we're all Hatters.
And he signed his email Hatter for Life. So that was a good point. Well, Hatter is the mascot, Hatters,
the mascot of our high school. Yeah. Big hat.
We got an email from Mike Zabo.
Okay.
Hello again to my favorite brothers and kind of comedians, Will Hines and Kevin Stone. I don't know why I'm Kevin Stone in this. You asked for feedback.
Emma Stone, because you always like.
Oh, right. Because I made that
mistake. You turned Emma Frost into Emma Stone.
You asked for feedback on the Dark Knight Returns, and I'm here for you. My background in DC comics are minimal. I don't like them normally, mostly because I don't like Superman or Green Lantern. I normally read event comics, which is why Kevin hates me so much. And both of them always show up in those. Batman is the one DC hero that I've read some stories and really enjoyed. I'd never read either Batman Year One or The Dark Knight Returns. I loved them both. The art of Year One is more my pace, but the story in Returns is just so much fun. Give me Batman beating the crap out of stronger people all the time. I'm going out on a limb to say DC might actually have something with this Batman character. They might want to market him a bit more. Yeah. I love your show and feel like you guys keep improving every season. Thank you. I mean this from the bottom of my heart. Please never stop prepping for shows. It really does feel like I'm just having a friendly chat with my buddies, which is perfect. You two are the best. And then he talks a little bit at the very end. There's dialogue between Superman and Batman in the Injustice story, right after Superman accidentally kills Lois Lane, that would be perfect for Will to read as Stan Lee. And I've read the Injustice story, and it's way better than it should be. I don't remember that specific dialogue, but the Injustice is based on that fighting video game where Superman is evil, which as a concept is I don't love. But right. The comic was written by Tom Taylor, who is just a really great character writer, and he just gets these characters so well. That assuming you can accept that Superman is becoming a jerk, and Wonder Woman 2 to a lesser extent. Everything else about those comics is just great DC stories.
All right.
It's a big if, but I found myself able to get by it, to accept that one problem. Thanks for the email, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
Johnny Goss emails us. I don't really have an answer for this, but I'm going to read it anyway. Milksops, just wanted to thank you for the podcast. I came from the other Screw It podcast, Write Your Book, Beatles. And while I've always been a fan of comics from the outside, I never actually read them. I've recently gotten my first books, and I've got the bug. I started with the Meta Barons, Jodorowsky and Gimenez. I'm not sure that's how it's pronounced. And moved into the Inkle, as well as Bronze Age, Swamp Thing, and Gideon Falls. I've loved them all for different reasons, and it's great to have a new way to appreciate storytelling. Would you recommend anything else to a reader like me? I like weird over cool. Thanks for the content, Johnny. And then he has a PS about the Beatles, Will. As a recording engineer, I've always loved the Beatles, but was never what one would be considered a fan. I might be coming around on these guys more. I was happy to discover the track Dark Room by Paul via the Beatles podcast. Very fun.
Nice.
And Paul is one of those Beatles, I believe.
Paul McCartney is one of the Beatles. Yes.
Okay, great. Okay. So he wants weird comics. I've never read Meta Barons. I've read Gideon Falls. I've never read Inkle. And Bronze Age Swamp Thing, is that Alan Moore?
I'm guessing, yes.
Yeah, so I've read that. So other weird stuff, I don't know off the top of my head. It's not super weird, but the Starman is sort of a spiritual sister to Swamp Thing by James Robinson. Maybe something like, and I haven't read all of this, but Grant Morrison's Animal Man might really appeal to you with the sort of meta awareness of being in a comic book.
Yeah. I mean, The Filth by Grant Morrison is truly strange and bizarre and almost hard to keep track of what's going on. But
probably you should read something by Grant Morrison because he's good at writing weird stuff. Doom Patrol is another thing he had a long run on. People really love. And it's the inspiration for the HBO Max show that I have not watched. What else? Anything else? Jump to mind?
When I think weird, I go outside of superheroes. I think if you go into the indie world, it's a lot more cryptic and sort of asking you to fill in the blanks a lot more. If you read a lot of Dan Clowes stuff like 8-Ball, it's your hand is held a lot less. I find that really interesting. Mm-hmm. Love and Rockets of the 80s and 90s, some of my favorites, but it's you have to do a lot of the work, which I don't mind. Within superheroes, yeah, Grant Morrison. I mean, the non-DC Alan Moore stuff, the America's Best Comics, some of that stuff is quite strange, like Promethea. It's trippy in a fun way that you might enjoy. Kevin, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. Gideon Falls is sort of a trippy horror comic by Jeff Lemire. And I forget the artist's name. It's I don't know, the initials are AS, I believe, but it's like Sorrentino or something. And I'm trying to think of something that fits that sort of realm. And nothing is jumping to mind. As I said, I don't have great answers for this email. It's not weird, but I think Criminal is just a great gritty comic, and maybe something that would be really worth your while, or anything by Brubaker and Phillips.
Yeah, maybe if you're going to do the Brubaker film, maybe Fatale would be better. It's a little more horror and mystery uncovering.
Yeah. Though I think the Fade Out is my favorite thing they did, which is sort of their Hollywood, classic Golden Age Hollywood murder story.
Yeah.
But Fatale is more in line with sort of the horror stuff. I don't know. There's some lines to go on. I mean, Inkle is one of those, and Meta Barons are those things I've always heard about, but never gotten around to reading. So you might be able to recommend stuff to us better than the other way around.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you for emailing, Johnny. I also have one email from one last email from David asking for some Roger Stern advice. I'm going to read it real quick, but I'll probably email him as well. I wanted to write in and ask you guys about the Roger Stern run you guys are always bringing up. I've poked around the internet for a reading guide, but haven't found anything concrete. I thought Unlimited would have a guide like they do for Slot, but unfortunately that's not the case. Should I read the Spectacular issues and switch over to Amazing? Thanks for the help, brothers. Sorry to steer the conversation away from Batman, who I love, but I'm a Spidey fan through and through. I don't think you need to read the Spectacular issues of Stern. There are some good stuff. I think, personally, I find it a lot more uneven, mostly because the art is very all over the map. There's a couple issues that are pretty good in that run. There's also, it's like he writes a couple issues, takes a few issues off, writes a few issues. It's
okay, yeah.
Inconsistent. When he takes over Amazing, he's paired with John Romita Jr. And it's just way, way, way better. So I don't think you need to read those issues. I also think they're not that bad to read. So, I would say if they're hard to find, I'm not even sure they're on Marvel Unlimited. Marvel Unlimited is missing a lot of Spectacular comics.
Interesting.
So if they're not on Marvel Unlimited, I don't think you need to go out of your way to find them. I think just read the Amazing issues that Stern did. But I'll probably email you this as well. Also, the Amazing Spider Talk who had us on as guests, Will.
Yes.
Recently covered that era of comics, and they talk a lot about, they do a podcast about the Spectacular issues, and they do a podcast about the Amazing issues of Stern. So you could just listen to the episode on the Spectacular issues and go into reading the Amazing issues if you wanted to.
Yeah, might great podcast. Love the Amazing Spider Talk.
Yeah, they know what they're talking about.
As opposed to us.
Yeah. I don't know why they feel the need to know things. And that's all we got, Will.
Hey, thanks so much for emailing us. So we're going to have a little bit of a break here before we get back to emails. Or actually, maybe it's more that this episode we're recording now is going to come out in a little bit. So anyway, whatever.
Please send it's going to be a break for us. From you, the listener, there won't be a break at all. But if you're sending us emails, if you've sent us emails since, whatever, February 14th, we might not answer it until mid-March.
We'll be right back on it. Yes, yeah, that's what I was trying to say. And I'm sorry I talked forever about those first two issues, but I was excited to see some great Paul Smith art. And the Professor Xavier is a Jerk is an amazing comic, and I'm glad I read it. And make mine milksop. And we'll see you guys next episode.
Yeah, take care of yourselves, everybody.
Bye.
Keep the brood out of your tummies. Screw it,
we're just going to talk about comics.
I'm Mark David Christensen.
I'm Kate Thompson.
And together we host Aw Crap, a Hellboy podcast, the show dedicated to the world of the half-demon hero created by Mike Mignola.
Every Wednesday we make our way through the pages of Hellboy, BPRD, Witchfinder, and many other related comic book titles.
Plus, we discuss the various Hellboy live-action and animated films, novels, and other media adaptations. That's Aw Crap, a Hellboy podcast on Campfire Media or wherever you get your podcasts.
Campfire.